item number 18, and that's the results of the 2016 Puget Sound Dungeness crab fishery. This is a briefing. So Bob and Mike?
You want to ask them to see if they can tune it down?
Yeah, we are running 40 minutes over, so don't look shocked. I'm not asking to cut it, but just, if, you know, put a little of it on 78 RPM, and, which nobody knows anymore what the hell 78 RPM is.
Yeah. I remember.
Need coffee?
You remember Edison?
Yeah, right. The old hand crank, you know. The old.
Commissioner, Commission, Director, Deputy Director, good morning. My name is Bob Sizemore, and yesterday Ron Warren indicated that I'm taking over for Rich Childers. He said they're very big shoes to fill, and I tried them on, and he's right. They're kind of big shoes to fill. I'm very honored to have this gentleman sitting next to me, Deputy Chief Sensi. In this particular fishery, fish program, and enforcement program, have an exceptional relationship and work very close together to make sure that this fishery is conducted under the intent of the commission policy. I've worked with Mike Sensi for decades, and it's always been a pleasure working with him. So, thanks, Mike. So this is about the Puget Sound crab fishery, and this report is for 2016. This report is required under commission policy. So this is offset a little bit from previous years on when we presented this report, but it does cover 2016. In the policy, there are key elements, which I'll go through briefly. So we will cover the performance and harvest of the 2016 Puget Sound commercial and recreational crab fisheries. The 2016 education and outreach effort will also be covered in this presentation. And crab fishery regulation compliance will be covered by Deputy Chief. So a revised policy was adopted by the Commission in 2010. The policy serves to protect and conserve Dungeness crab resources. It provides for recreational and commercial fishery opportunities and maintains a base recreational season from year to year. This fishery is divided up into two seasons, a summer season and a winter season. The summer season generally begins in July and goes through Labor Day. The winter season, October through December, 7 days a week. And the limit in the policy is 5 crab daily bag limit. Also under the policy are guidelines. This fishery is managed using the 3S system. So the 3S system recognizes that sex is important, so this is a male-only fishery. Size is important as well. The limit is 6 1/4 inches in Puget Sound, so this gives opportunity for several reproductive seasons to occur before the animal, the crab, enter the fishery for exploitation. And another component is soft shell or season. So the soft shell condition of the crab are tested before we open fisheries. If you fish soft shell Dungeness crab, there's handling mortality. And also the female crab contain sperm packets for like up to a year. So that's another reason why females aren't harvested. The policy also calls for enhanced enforcement strategies, which we'll talk about later. There's a mandate to pursue education and outreach to improve rural compliance, implement strategies to reduce derelict crab pots, and recognize regional differences and implement policy priorities to share available resources between the stakeholders. There are 7 management regions, and this graph up here shows there's a division of Region 3 and Region 2 into subregions. But essentially, Region 1 is the San Juan Islands, Region 3 is the Strait of Juan de Fuca,
Region 2 is around inside and outside of Whidbey Island and the Port Townsend area. 4 is Central Sound. 5 is Hood Canal. 6 is around Vashon Island, and 7 is all of South Sound. This fishery is structured to provide recreational and commercial opportunity in regions 1, 2, and 3. So basically the north part of the sound. Regions 4, 5, and 6 are reserved for recreational harvest opportunity. So Central and South Sound are recreational only. There's regional specific annual harvest quotas, and they're set pre-season to increase the stability and predictability of the fisheries. Regional state tribal harvest shares are established through annual management plans. Plans generally run from June through May, and as I mentioned, there's soft shell closures during the spring and early summer. So this is the harvest and production of the recreational and treaty fisheries section. So this shows the tribal harvest and state harvest since 1991. As you may recall, the Rafiti decision took place and was implemented in 1995. So prior to that, there was significantly more state harvest than tribal harvest. And since 1995, this graph shows that there's roughly equity between the state and the tribes on a yearly basis. Dungeness crab harvest for the state fisheries in Puget Sound are divided into commercial and recreational fisheries. This policy took place in 2010. So you notice that prior to 2010, or the revised policy, I should say, prior to 2010, there was more recreational harvest, or more commercial harvest rather than recreational harvest. And following the policy of 2010, these came much closer to being equitable between recreational and commercial harvest. This is a look at harvest by region. So you notice that the majority of harvest occurs in the San Juan Islands, around Whidbey Island, and out in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. So the way this is structured, most of the commercial harvest occurs up in the San Juan Islands, a little bit higher recreational harvest around Whidbey Island inside, and there's some equity on Whidbey Island outside. And then, as I mentioned, in areas 4, 5, 6, and 7, that's designed for recreational harvest only. So this looks at the openings based on the two-card system. So when you buy a crab endorsement with your license, there's a summer card and a winter card. This graph shows that in all the regions, there was a recreational harvest season in the summer. In the winter, there is normally a recreational harvest in all regions, but this year, we've seen a decline in abundance of juvenile year classes in areas 6 and 7, which is the South Sound. So there was no recreational fishing, winter fishing season in the South Sound this year. And again, areas 1, 2, and 3 are allow for commercial harvest, and there was a harvest season for the commercial harvesters in 2016. This is a graph that some of you have seen before. It breaks down by season the catch record cards issued, and we see between 2009 and 2016, summer catch record cards have been roughly the same, ranging from about 200,000 to about 240,000. We saw a slight decline in 2016. This also shows the number of cards that were returned at the end of the season and the percentage. So over time, we've gradually improved return of the catch record cards, but it's only up to 53%. So that's something that we still need to work on to try to improve the percentage of cards that are returned. Interesting, the winter fishery has kind of seen the same trend, but a decline in catch record cards issued, especially in 2016. But the return rate is much higher on the winter fishery, going from about 44% in 2009 to 62% in 2016. This shows the number of new recreational crab fishers between 2010 and 2016. So out of the total crab endorsement cards issued, we've looked at whether that person has received a card in previous seasons. And this shows that there's a large percentage each year of new entrants to the fishery. And that ranges between 34% and 26% between 2010 and 2016. So this is a pretty significant number of fishers that are new to the fishery. It's easy to enter this fishery. You get your license, get your crab endorsement, you buy a pot, and you go out, and you can wade out and throw your pot. You can row out and throw your pot. You can, you know, take your motorboat, wherever. But there's a lot of new fishers to this fishery. So this is a challenge as far as regulation compliance. We'll talk about that more. But each year is a learning curve for about a quarter of the fishers that are out there. On the commercial side, it's a limited entry fishery since 1981, and there's about 249 transferable licenses. This shows that the majority of the license owners have one or two licenses, and then a small minority have multiple licenses above that. This chart shows the ex-vessel value of the commercial crab fishery, and we've seen over time a fairly large increase in the value of the fishery. There was a change between 2015 and 2016, so there's about a 17% drop in the value of the fishery, and this is attributed to two factors. One is a decline in landings from 3.1 to 2.9 million pounds. And the ex-vessel value also dropped from 458 to 405 per pound. So those two factors combined contributed to this drop between 2015 and 2016 in the commercial fishery. Education outreach. Here's a young man who is holding a crab correctly and not getting pinched. So there's a number of challenges in this fishery and a number of issues that we're trying to address through recreation outreach, education outreach. Some of these are resource conservation violations, possession of undersized females. Pots are required to have a rot cord in them, so if the pots are lost, that rot cord will allow escapement of the crab after a period of time. There are some resource allocation violations exceeding the data limit and failures to record and report catch on catch record cards. Another challenge that we have is closed season crabbing. So the crab fishery is open 5 days a week, 2 days a week is closed on the recreational side in Puget Sound. And it's people who don't recognize those days and leave their pots fishing on those closed days. So the long-term goal for education outreach is to improve regulation compliance. There's a key program message, Know Before You Go. So this is a message put forth by the department and advisors about understanding the fishery, how to appropriately gear your pots and fish your pots. And there's a host of collaborators and partners in this outreach effort. First and foremost is our enforcement officers who are making contacts on the water, fishery managers, biologists making contact with fishers on a regular basis, NGOs, Puget Sound Anglers, Coastal Conservation, Northwest Straits Commission, and Northwest Foundation have done a lot of work on education and outreach, and they're kind of this collaboration, they're our outreach arm. And then the marine resource committees up at in the north end of Puget Sound are tremendous as far as outreach at boat ramps, through meetings, through direct contacts with fishers, handing out information about how to fish appropriately. So this is our the agency webpage, and you probably can't see all the detail on this webpage, but there are very important links on what the regulations are. And there's a whimsical video on here. I hope you get a chance to look at it when you have an opportunity. But it's about 6 or 7 minutes long. It has two of our biologists, Don Rothas and Don Velasquez. And they make it really fun to talk about harvesting crab, what you need to do, where you need to go. But more importantly, they're telling you how to set up your gear, how to weight your pots, have enough scope on your line so that you're not losing pots. Fish at times when there's not as much tidal exchange where your pots are going to get lost, and marking your pots so that if they're recovered, we have an opportunity to contact you. And this year we started a program where we're actively contacting lost pot owners and getting those pots back to them, along with a kind of a heavy-handed education message about how not to make this happen again. There's also a crab pamphlet that has been put together. It's called Crabbing in Puget Sound. There are lots of copies of this out there. These are at the regional offices. They're at licensing. Everyone who purchases a crab endorsement gets this education pamphlet. This is used by Marine Resource Committee volunteers for handouts. And about 1,000 of these were packaged with gauges and rock cords. And this pamphlet were put into a package, and that was used to target mostly new entrants to the fishery, so that they have all the information they need to make sure that they're in compliance with the regulations. Another piece is the Northwest Strait Foundation. They put together this additional crab pamphlet, and it's called Catch More Crab. So what this is, the underlying message here is that to catch more crab, you should try to gear up so that you keep your gear, and so that it's not fishing on closed days, it's not fishing after season. And again, this is another method that is used to reach out to folks. This is on social media, so if someone's looking at crab on social media, there'll be a link to this pamphlet. They also have a video about the detriments of derelict crab pots fishing. So this is a really good pamphlet that they put together. Kind of central in this slide here is pots recovered from this year during close season. So enforcement has been working very closely with our staff to go out on close days, recover pots. And it's ended up, this has been a great educational opportunity. We've collected over 600 pots this season. Some of that is tribal, some of that is commercial. The majority of it is recreational pots. And we see this as an opportunity to do some outreach and education by directly contacting the people who are violating the regulations. And I will hand this off to Mike Sensi. Oh, sorry.
The catch record return improving, but slowly. Do we have an idea of whether some of those are just unused purchased catch records? Is that something that can be monitored?
Thank you, Commissioner. So the catch record amount for the summer is about 220,000 cards. Mm-hmm. And as you noted, we're getting about a 52% return on those. A number of years back, we did catch record cards and telephone interviews. Mm-hmm. So through those telephone interviews, that gave us a estimate of if you didn't return your card, how many crab did you catch? Mm-hmm. And a lot of those were zeros. So it's that you're correct. A lot of the people who didn't catch crab aren't quite getting that they still need to turn in the catch record card. And when we make our recreational estimates, there's actually a bias that's factored into the estimate of the total recreational catch that takes that into account.
Thank you.
Well, your question. 17% drop in production or catch rates 2015-2016. Was that attributed to the closures because of red tide, or was that primarily the reason for the reduction?
So for the commercial side?
Yeah.
The commercial fleet fishes after the recreational fleet. So a lot of it depends on how much quota was taken by the recreational harvesters before there's commercial harvest. And there's very little drop in actual landings in the commercial fleet, the 3.1 versus the 2.9 million pounds.
Okay.
A lot of that is attributed to the drop in ex-vessel value. And I should restate that the ex-vessel value is just the first recorded value on a fish ticket. So that just represents what the harvester and the buyer agree to pay and record on a fish ticket. So, yeah, most of it's the actual price per pound.
Thank you, Chair. In your numbers, you had a new fishing rate of 25%, you know, roughly, new people coming in. But I guess I'm a hunter, and if we don't return our report cards, we get spanked, and it's tough buying a new license. So, I mean, yes, you've got a turnover rate that, yeah, so what if I can't buy one next year? But why can't you use a system like that? Because to me, back to what the commercial guy said, if you can't measure, how do you mark? So I think this has got to be pretty imperative, and it sounds as though you're trying to get as many as you can, but use the power of persuasion as long as you can, then you have to use persuasion of power from time to time.
Yeah, we don't have a very big hammer to enforce that. So what we have is a penalty for the next season if you don't turn in your catch record card. Was that $10? Yeah, so there's a $10 penalty.
So there is a $10 fee. Okay.
Yeah, the initial recommendation was higher to make that hammer a little bit bigger, but it's apparently not working very effectively, since we're still getting a pretty small percentage, or we're getting a large return, and statistically that 60%, 50 to 60% gives us a good estimate. But of course we'd like to see that higher.
But is it implied when you buy one, if you don't return this, the next one is going to cost you $10 more? Okay.
Yeah, that's well understood.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I did want to reiterate something that Mr. Sizemore mentioned. Our partnership with the folks that manage our shellfish resources, it's one of a continuous coordination on the policy front, as well as the management and the compliance pieces. We're constantly discussing how those three things complement one another. There's retooling always underway. I guess I really appreciate the continuous dialogue that we have to try to improve compliance in the fishery and the management of the fishery and to survive some of the policy discussions that we have. And it's nothing short of fantastic in terms of the level of interaction that we have, and even participation in some of the tough work, to have a shellfish biologist on our patrol boat pulling crab pots all day, as the commissioners that have gone with us on these events know, it's a lot of work. It's dirty work, and it's pretty cool. This is a little bit more in Bob's realm, but if I get this wrong, Bob, kick me. So we have samplers that collect information at the dock, and the information is collected at those 22 survey locations are compared to what we're seeing in terms of compliance records that we collect. And so, you know, we're getting, I guess, sort of the first bite at the apple. We contact people primarily on the water. instead of at the dock, not that we don't have a presence there. But the idea is try to get to folks and educate them before they violate. And so I think we're seeing compliance numbers that are similar, although in the past, catch record card compliance tends to be higher when sampled at the dock than when we sample it on the water. So I encounter Bob fishing, and he's harvested 2 out of his 5 crab. He still has crab pots deployed. Maybe he hasn't checked his second crab pot. You know, legally, he's required to account for those first couple of crab that he retained. But oftentimes, folks won't bother to do that until they've achieved their limit. And so from a strict compliance perspective, you know, our records will reflect that Bob was out of compliance, but those crab many times are recorded when he makes it back to the dock. So I guess what I'm trying to say is the compliance picture, in my view, is more accurate if it's sampled at the dock relative catch record cards. So if I'm a little less than succinct, I apologize. I was at Seafair all last night. We worked till midnight, and I'm still trying to get rid of some fog. But so you can see what the sampling site the site surveys resulted in terms of compliance. Obviously, you know, the needle hasn't really moved in any dramatic fashion, except if you look at catch record cards. Certainly, there's some significance in terms of percentage change from 2011 to 2016. So these are folks, obviously, that have crab in possession that are being measured. So 2.3% of the individuals that were sampled in 2016 failed to record their catch, compared to 11% in 2011. So there's three types of violators in my view. There's the confused, the person that we need to educate, and we put a lot of effort in trying to do that. But with a 25% recruitment every year, you know, it's a continuous effort, right? We don't want to pinch these folks. If we can increase, you know, knowledge, if people better know before they go, that of course gives us the ability to focus more on the opportunistic, the individual that feels that they ought to have double the limit today because they didn't get to fish yesterday, or whatever the excuse of the moment happens to be. But you can usually address the opportunists with some presence, and then you have the hardcore. And those are the folks that expend a lot of time. If we're going to catch, they have a plan. They thought about how to make multiple trips throughout the day undetected, and oftentimes we wind up pinching them for a lesser violation, even though there was something larger afoot. So, for example, a person might have a limit of crab and none of them recorded. Well, was it because they just didn't take the time to account for their catch, or were they trying to get that first limit home so that they could go back out and catch at another limit? So we do try to spend time on the hardcore. I'll in the interest of time, not try to speed through the enforcement component, but I will touch on some of the cases that we made involving the hardcore. And I guess I also want to make a point now that I probably would have made later. not everybody fits in a box or a category. So if an individual goes out under the guise of a recreational crab season, steals crab out of everybody's gear, and then sells them on the illicit shellfish market, is that person a recreational fisherman or a commercial fisherman? So there's the work that we do in maintaining an orderly fishery, and then there's, you know, chasing folks like that around, and that area of work doesn't seem to really fit anywhere. You know, when people ask me, well, what's the compliance in the recreational fishery by recreational fishermen? Well, I have this other thing out here that is a contributor to the problem, and it's a factor. And it's not always considered. So here's what we saw on the water contacts. Comprised the majority of our public contacts. So we contacted folks while they were about to fish or in the middle of fishing or just leaving the fishing grounds before they made it back to the dock. So we contacted almost 2,500 fishers, checked almost 4,000 crab. And here's what we saw in terms of compliance. Possession of undersized crab, 6% of those individuals that we contacted were in violation. 0.8%, 0.8% were in possession of female crab. 1.5% exceeded the daily limit. And then 16.9% failed to record their crab. So remember this compliance number compared to what we saw at the site survey, during the site surveys, right? Catch record card compliance was much higher than what this reflects. Also, you have to remember that our approach isn't scientific. If Mr. Graybill happens to leave a group of boats that we pull up on immediately upon seeing us, we're probably going to go say hi to Mr. Graybill. Any behavior, sir, only because, you know, we like Mr. Graybill and we want to say hi, but some behaviors attract our attention, so that makes our approach less than random, and I think that that also plays, it factors into compliance. Our officers are, and Commissioner Smith, Chair Smith has been with us where, you know, he's heard us thinking through who we're going to contact and why. Well, that guy sure seems in a hurry all of a sudden, you know, or boy, what a bad attitude. Is he trying to distract us? We usually don't get this kind of reaction from the public. What's he hiding? Or she, so. I guess I want to say this. We've had some stable presence, thank you to the FISH program for providing us with additional funding so that we can have additional presence over and above the status quo. It's been pretty stable. This fishery was ignored for a long time. For many years, we were the Department of Salmon when it came to marine resources. That's where we spent the majority of our time. We've dedicated a lot of presence here that I think is starting to show some results. But it's going to take time. So I think we need to be patient. We can need to continue that constant presence. There are additional enforcement efforts beyond catch compliance during the recreational fishery. We spend a lot of time dealing with lost or abandoned gear. We spend a lot of time relative close season monitoring and addressing close season poaching. Illegal foreign fishing occurs. We seize hundreds of crab pots every year that are fished in a long line fashion along the U.S.-Canada border that are competing with our citizens for that resource. Gear, of course, isn't always compliant. You heard Mr. Sizemore mention rot cord. We don't want lost or abandoned gear to continue to fish and kill resource. So we're focused on gear regulations as well, and then illicit markets. We do have a very robust illicit shellfish market. If my mom would have told me that you could go buy crab at a nail salon, I would have told her she was crazy. But now I can't pass a nail salon without wondering whether they're trafficking in shellfish. We try to conduct a proactive approach in that get to gear that's either out there on closed days or out there directly after the season closed. Get to that gear right away before it becomes lost, before it becomes derelict. We have a gear notice program, warning notice program that Mr. Sizemore mentioned. Basically, the gear is disabled and it's tagged. When we conduct our gear sweeps, some days there's not an inch of room left on our patrol vessels to put yet another crab pot on it. So we'll use this other strategy when we have our hands full. And I'll show you an example of that tag. But understand that we don't know what percentage of the gear that's out there during a closed day or a closed season is actually derelict, i.e. is lost or abandoned, compared to I set it and I just left it. I'm fishing during the closed season. I'm poaching or, I was just, for whatever reason, unable to retrieve my pot or unwilling to retrieve my crab pot. So this is what the gear tag program looks like. Pretty self-explanatory. The individual, that if they come out and retrieve their gear, they're going to see that the problem was identified and how to come into compliance is laid out there for them. So the crab pots are disabled so that they can't continue to fish when we do tag them and leave them. So I guess just remember, just because a crab pot is still present during a closed day or during the closed season doesn't mean that it's necessarily fishing if we got to it and we were able to disable it and tag it. So there's a lot of problems with closed season gear recovery. The primary one for us is how long it takes to process. We have to treat this gear like personal property, and so there's tracking and of course you have to reach out to the owners, and it's pretty time intensive. Oftentimes we can't identify the individual because they improperly marked their buoy, and in those cases we just deem it derelict and it's either destroyed or sold at auction. Simply removing gear does not result in an educational opportunity, and so that's not a good thing. Some folks lose gear and they think that someone stole their crab pot. We may have taken it, and then we can't educate them that the reason we did is because there was a multitude of problems with the gear itself. So that's a challenge we face all the time. You can see that we recovered 535 crab pots last year, and 23 crab pots were disabled and tagged. If you're wondering why that's less than the year before, well, there was 4 less patrol days. Maybe compliance went up, but I can't tell you that for sure. And the 2015 number probably includes some seizures of gear illegally deployed by Canadian citizens, foreign fishing vessels. So I don't know what those numbers mean in terms of the compliance picture for sure, but I'll have a better understanding of that, I'm sure, after this presentation. This is a big deal. We have a very robust illicit shellfish market that competes with our legitimate commercial industry. It compromises the integrity of that industry. These catches are not accounted for. And frankly, if you want to put folks in the box, all the boxes are involved, including the folks that don't belong in a box. So this takes a lot of time. I could take the field personnel that I rely on to do the general compliance work during an open recreational crab fishery are the same folks I rely on in order to work this aspect of the job. So when they tie into a major investigation, they're putting tracking devices on vessels known to poach, and they're serving search warrants for bank records, and they're developing spreadsheets, and they're doing forensic accounting. They're not patrolling the fishing grounds.
So in summary, the management was structured to implement the commission policy. There was recreational fisheries open 5 days a week, July 1st through Labor Day. There was winter recreational fisheries in all regions except for South Puget Sound. Commercial fishing occurred in regions 1, 2, and 3 per policy in partnership with organizations, NGOs, angler groups, other fishery groups. There was a significant amount of education outreach, and that was continued in 2016. Overall, the regulation and compliance in the recreational fishery depends on the rules. Recreational rule compliance needs improvement for immediate catch reporting on catch record cards. If you go back to that table, that was one of our main issues, the compliance when you land the crab, recording that immediately. We also have continued ongoing compliance problems with appropriately marking the buoys. And then close season gear removal patrols continue to be an area of emphasis. So if there's any additional questions?
Thank you. I was quiet yesterday, so... I have a couple of questions, and I'll try to be as brief, and a comment, too. So could you go to Bob? And by the way, welcome. You've got, as you say, big shoes to fill. This is a very successful, important resource to both our recreational and commercial folks. The resource has been doing very well, as we can see, in terms of harvests or biomass. But I think it's starting to get some high scrutiny by folks, the public, and our tribal partners. And so, any event. So, could you go to slide 14, please? Yeah. So, and this is a. A slide that your predecessor prepared every year, and it was kind of along the lines of showing the impact of the change in the allocation with the new policy, you know, allocating more to the recreational sector away from the commercial. And, you know, I never liked this way that this is presented, and the reason is that, you know, it shows, or at first blush it's like, wow, boy, the commercial guys are really, you know, hitting it out of the ballpark. But really, I think, and this was demonstrated, I think, very our friends in Oregon did, a much better job in showing the impact of the changes in the allocation scheme on the Columbia River on the commercial sector, where you actually look at, okay, well, what would the commercial X vessel value have been without the change? And I think if you plotted that, you'd see that the commercial sector has been profoundly impacted by. And I think, you know, as we continue to evaluate, and that's what the commission policy calls us to do, is to look at, examine the policy on a year-to-year basis. I would, if you can remember, to kind of plot or at least try to estimate, okay, well, what is the cost to the commercial sector as a result in terms of lost revenue as a result of the policy? I think that needs to be borne out and at least shown. That's one thing. I also, could you go to the catch record card slide that you had? I think it was, sure, in terms of where you showed the numbers. There. I think in the summer I think your comment was that over time, our compliance with the return of catch record cards has improved. I respectfully disagree with that assessment based on just the percentages. You know, maybe for the winter, perhaps, but the summer, where I think the bulk of the crab are harvested, it looks pretty flat to me. And I just challenge you on that characterization of improvement. And one other thing too, and I'll just, it's kind of a comment and observation, is I live in Ballard area. I live in Shill Shoal, close to Shill Shoal Beach, Golden Gardens. There's a private little beach that, it's kind of off the beaten path. And my wife and I, it was July 3rd, Monday night, beautiful summer evening. I didn't have to go to work the next day, so we walked down for the sunset, and I could see somebody on their paddleboard coming in, and looked like a big, he had something on the front of his paddleboard. He was so far out, I couldn't see what it was. But sure enough, as he came ashore, he had a crab pot. And I don't know if he, I guess he wasn't one of those bad guys. But I think it underscores, and this is just me, happened to be at a certain place at a certain time, I saw somebody in violation of the rules. And, that's, I think, the tip of the iceberg. And there was some news coverage around that time about noncompliance. I think King 5 did a story. Our tribal friends are watching this very, very closely. And, Bob, as you know, I'm sure you've been engaged in conversations. This is a big problem. And part of, and this policy was implemented before I came on the commission, but my understanding is that there was an understanding that when you were going to allocate more of the fish to recreational, you were going to have catch accounting difficulties. And I think they've come, and that there was going to be a concentrated effort to educate folks. I don't think the department can be faulted in trying to outreach and enforce. I'm not criticizing it. I think it's just the nature of what's going on. The popularity, the moving in of people to our great state, this amazing opportunity that you can go and have a Dungeness crab on your 4th of July barbecue.
It's concerning to me as a commissioner, and I think we should all be concerned about this in terms of the resource. So I'll just leave it at that. And it's troubling to me. I don't think that we've done very well, and I'm not faulting anybody, but I think the compliance has not improved. And from what I'm hearing from you folks, so with that, I'll stop.
I hear you loud and clear, Bob. One of the things, though, is you mentioned in your presentation that you questioned the validity of the information from the department. You questioned the accuracy of the numbers. I'd like to hear more about that, but when I see, although we're not getting 100% compliance on catch record card information, that's certainly more than enough to draw very accurate conclusions about catch. We use much lower percentages than other fisheries to establish our numbers. And so I wonder, I guess I'd need to know more about what you're questioning in terms of recreational catch accuracy, because with these catch record cards, just that alone, we should have a very good idea what our actual catch is on the recreational side.
Yeah, if I can respond to that, I mischaracterized that as far as the accuracy of the information. So we're getting about 50 to 60% return on catch record cards. And natural resource having that kind of sample size is really good, is really high. And the variances that we're looking at on that kind of catch information, even if you break it down into regions, is about 0.4 to 10% variance, which is a very, very tight variance. So we are getting, on the catch record card estimate alone, we are getting very good, tight, precise estimates of recreational harvest.
Right.
I also want to mention that part of the validation that we're doing this year for that is looking at a specific area, in area 8-1 and 8-2 around Whidbey Island. We're also doing some creel work, and we've just completed that in July, and that can be used to validate the kind of information that we're getting on catch record cards. So that's an additional step that we're taking this year to make sure that that information is, that we're not making assumptions that we shouldn't be making.
Right. I would venture, and it's been a while since I've looked at the actual numbers, but to compare, say, the number of people that turn in their salmon catch record card, or on the hunting side, I think these are probably better than those, is my guess. If not close, they're probably a lot better than those, even with penalties that are assigned to them. So I really wondered why you would question the accuracy of the information.
Can I comment on that?
Please do, yeah.
The biggest issue was the areas that he just mentioned, 8-1 and 8-2, where the numbers reflected in the last couple of years, the recreational fleet had caught 1 million pounds of crab in their summer fishery. And for that to happen in a 50-day period, just the average itself is 20,000 pounds of crab a day, every day, for 50 days. And that puts some 450 boats on the water every single day for 50 days to harvest that amount of crab. We know there's not that, it's not an average, you know, there's a there's a peak at the beginning, and then it wanes off, and then you have your Labor Day weekend and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm certain that Officer Sensei can attest to, you know, somewhat knowing the number of boats that are active on the water in a given day during that time frame. And it just seems unrealistic that they can harvest that amount of crab every single day. Our commercial fisheries, we have the very best gear, the very best bait, and in our fishery, if we catch 20,000 pounds a day for more than 3 or 4 days in the beginning of the season, we're really doing something. From the, it goes like this, and then.
Okay. Yeah, it wouldn't.
The tribal fishery is very similar in that aspect, so it just
right.
seems very unrealistic that those numbers are accurate.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Just one last comment. I mean, if you estimated 450 boats in that region within Puget Sound, it wouldn't surprise me if there were 2,000 boats out during the season on certain on a weekend on Puget Sound engaged in that activity. So, but yes, let's look at that. I understand your concern, and I think we need to look at that. And as you say, Deputy Director Sensi has the boats out there and observing, and maybe he can help contribute to that to make estimates of number of boats engaged in that activity. But just knowing during that period of time and within the population base and boating activity on Puget Sound during that time period, there could be thousands of boats out there engaged in that activity. I think that's reasonable. No?
Not true.
Okay. Well, there.
There's
boats
out there, but there's not 2,000 of them. I mean, trust me on that one.
All right. You know, when we have a sockeye run to the Brewster Pool, there are 450 boats just fishing for sockeye. So it doesn't, you know, and that's in Brewster, Washington.
Oh,
all right. So that's just
it's a different geography, different place. That's all my point is.
So, Commissioner Graybill, I just want to mention too that Creel study that we're doing in A1 and A2, part of that is counting the number of boats in those areas.
Excellent.
Yeah,
that'll help.
So that should give
that'll
us some
help.
Better information about what the actual effort by boat is.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
I know we're behind the time and people are anxious to get home, but I do remember I was part of developing this policy. In fact, my first meeting with the commission was the meeting in Tumwater. There was a special meeting devoted to this topic only, all day. And Lisa Venerosa was our able staff involved. There were over 100 people, some dressed in with crab hats, carrying signs. In the sport fishing interest in this fishery was through the roof, and over the years their opportunity was reduced year after year after year. So we were down to the point that in some of the most popular regions we were only offering 1 or 2 days a week during the summer. And people were furious. I'd like to go back to that chart where it shows the poundage between sport and commercial, because that's the critical allocation result. And what I find so interesting, and why I think that this policy, hang on, why I think this policy was a smashing success from the perspective of what the commission was trying to do, was we were looking for more parity. You used the word parity. We've approached greater parity. It's still not 50-50. The commercials are still taking more pounds of crabs. They're still doing well in terms of ex-vessel value. And if you look at the years prior to the change in policy, the commercials were taking twice as much as the sport. Was that fair when the sport fishery was being reduced year after year, squeezed into their allocation with the increase in interest in the sport fishery? We had people begging for more opportunity by the dozens. We had hours of testimony. So I think this is a great success. The commercials are still taking more crab in poundage. They're doing well in terms of ex-vessel value. We've got tremendous opportunity for the sport fishers. There's more coming in. This is a great fishery. As Kurt was talking about the fishery in the Skagit, this is one of our great quality of life fisheries for people in Puget Sound. In fact, good indicators, one of my friends from law school, who's not involved in any hunting or fishing ever, she's a vegetarian. She and her husband have gone out in a canoe and taken crabs. That's the low bar of entry in this fishery. So I think this has just been a tremendous success. We got to a fairer place.
Thank you. Anything else?
I think that this is one we can celebrate, looking at that graph. What it says, since the policy was passed, is that more total crab is taken, and it just is a reminder when you have a healthy fishery that it's a lot more fun to manage.
Well, thank you. Oh, Mike.
I was just going to add just a little food for thought. So there's a lot of focus on the regulated activities. Just remember that we have folks that are coloring outside the lines for profit, that are competing with our legitimate commercial fishery, that are also undermining recreational opportunities. And I want to spend more time chasing those people. It's very difficult to measure. We have some challenges, measuring this fishery with respect to, what's harvested and what the compliance outlook is. But those challenges are even more extreme when you're dealing with the trafficking and shellfish and just flat close season harvest. And there's a lot of it that's going on. And again, they're just pure poachers, and I would like to spend more time on those folks than making sure somebody has their catch record card in their possession, because I think that's frankly where the larger impact is. But I can't tell you what that impact is, because it's like chasing ghosts.
Well, you won't be able to do it today because you have to go to sea turn, right? Mr. Sizemore, thank you for the presentation, the briefing. I thought that was very helpful, and we'll continue on and look forward to it in the future. Thank you. That takes care of